Hello, everyone. I'm Omar Sechdina, and welcome to Power Play for Friday, October 13th. Certainly not a very lucky day for Canada and Mexico as Prime Minister Trudeau wraps up his North American tour this week. There's word that Washington is making another major demand in NAFTA negotiations, upping the Made in America requirement for North American cars. Could it be the final nail in the coffin for the talks? Also ahead, Liberal MPs are being summoned to Ottawa Sunday night for a special meeting first thing Monday morning, when Finance Minister Bill Morneau will make a presentation to his caucus colleagues, likely on the government's contentious tax reforms. Monday is also when the leader of Catalan has to decide whether or not to split from Spain. That's the critical deadline imposed by the country's prime minister. We'll speak with Spain's ambassador to Canada on the show. But first, Donald Trump ratchets up the rhetoric against Iran, throwing the future of the nuclear deal in doubt.
As I have said many times, the Iran deal was one of the worst and most one-sided transactions the United States has ever entered into. Iran is not living up to the spirit of the deal. So today, in recognition of the increasing menace posed by Iran, and after extensive consultations with our allies, I am announcing a new strategy to address the full range of Iran's destructive action.
For more on the so-called new Iran strategy, CTV's Richard Madden joins us now from Washington. Richard, incredibly loaded language in this speech. What did you make of it?
Well, President Trump has been channeling that he was going to take action on Iran. Even as a candidate, he threatened to rip up the deal. But what we saw today was Trump has decertified the deal, but that doesn't mean the Americans are pulling out. He's kicking the new policy over to Congress. Congress now has to determine what these tougher standards or tougher sanctions are. They have 60 days to come up with a plan, and then Trump threatened that he will terminate it. But the problem with that line is that the United States, one country alone, can't terminate the Iran deal. This was signed by an international community that took over a dozen years to come up with. You have pushback from the EU. You also have pushback from Russia, saying that worried about Trump's decision today and making it a domestic issue, not adhering to this international standard. However, what Trump can do now is he can go back to his base and say, look, I've kept my promise that we are going to get out of the Iran deal. He hasn't really done that. He's walking a fine line. Yes, he's decertifying on the one hand, but on the other hand, he has an out through Congress.
But he's essentially punted it, as you said, to Congress, who could choose to impose sanctions and then withdraw from the deal. What's the reaction been from Iran's president, Hassan Rouhani?
Well, he did make a statement today just questioning he called President Trump, he won't succumb to the pressures of a foreign dictator. Iran's position is that this is an international deal. You can't just walk away from it. And it questions it raises the question of possibly more anti-American rhetoric coming from the Middle East. But what it also does is it further isolates the United States from the rest of the world. And for the first time in decades, Iran might come out of this looking like, I don't want to say the hero, but Iran's going to come across looking like, look, we were trying to play by our rules. It's the United States that is not. So definitely an interesting move by President Trump. Noticeably, though, is there is very little pushback on the congressional side so far. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi did come out saying you don't walk away from an international treaty, but you're not hearing astute criticism from the Democrats, as many had expected.
But bottom line, Richard, this is yet another sign that Trump is really undoing Obama's legacy, because this is a deal that took 18 months and was really one of the key markers of his term in office, of Obama's time in office.
Oh, quite possibly. Trump relishes undoing the Obama legacy, not just with the Iran deal, but he is also taking other steps or executive orders to undo Obamacare, allowing insurance companies to sell through across state lines and giving more power to the states, further undermining what was in place through Obamacare, likely rising healthcare premiums for Americans sometime next year. So this is just another whack at the house that Obama built during his tenure. And Trump is making sure that he does as much as he can to unwind the accomplishments under the former Obama administration. However, the Iran deal is something that Trump had promised during the campaign, but it is not as hard line as he described when he was, you know, when he was promising to get rid of this deal altogether, because it's not that easy.
Yeah, that's a very good point. He didn't torpedo that deal, but he certainly put its future in doubt. CTV's Richard Madden in Washington. Richard, thanks so much.
All right, thanks, pal.
So what exactly does Trump's new strategy for Iran mean? For her analysis, Besma Mamani, senior fellow at the Center for International Governance and Innovation and professor at the Balsley School of International Affairs, joins us now from Kitchener, Ontario. So let's talk a little bit about why this announcement had to be done now. Richard talked a little bit about the timelines, but what motivated such a hardline announcement today, Besma?
Well, I think, you know, basically, I think Trump is frustrated. He's frustrated. He's not able to get the legislative, laws passed through Congress. We've seen, obviously, Obamacare that he's really hard to dismantle has been very difficult for him. And clearly, I think this is an opportunity for him to punt it, as Richard said, to Congress to make them the fall guys if they're unable to come up with a better deal. He knows that I think that this is something that plays wildly in his base. It puts Congress in a very awkward position. One of the things that I think Congress is going to have to face is the reality that many of the congressional leaders privately say that this is a good deal for what it's supposed to do, which is to keep Iran in technical compliance of diminishing its nuclear capacity, even though it does not, I think, change Iranian behavior in the region. The fact of the matter is the agreement was never supposed to do that. So it's going to be very difficult for any congressional leaders to basically oppose this.
But explain me the rationale here, because international observer after international observer has said that Iran is in full compliance of that 2015 deal. So why won't Trump recertify it?
Because he cannot go to his base and say that the Iranians are behaving properly. I mean, that goes against his whole mantra of his campaign and his entire presidency. He has constantly talked about the Iranians in a negative light. Now, keep in mind here, this is not to say that the Iranians are not up to no good in the region. They very much are destabilizing in Iraq, destabilizing in Syria, and so forth. This is not a question of that. But the reality is when it comes to this particular disagreement, as you said, the IAEA has certified that Iran 8 times is in compliance with the technical aspect of not only decreasing its stockpile, also destroying centrifuges, all of the aspects of the deal that were in the agreement. What it does not do is kind of reintegrate Iran into the community of states. But that was never a part of the deal in the first place. Its foreign policy was never a part of the actual deal. That is something that Trump has to get accustomed to. You can't change, an entire country's ideology and regime overnight unless you're planning on doing what you did with Iraq. And we know how that played out.
But this could almost have the effect of further emboldening the hardliners in Iran, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this plays in very nicely into hardliners, attempt to say that the Americans are basically after us no matter what. They don't, deal in good faith. And this is not just about Iran. This is really important here. It's also about North Korea, because we know that the United Nations has an international agreement to levy some sanctions on North Korea for its misbehavior. But the North Koreans are saying, look, the Americans signed an agreement internationally. You have a UN Security Council resolution, and still the Americans are after the Iranians. So why on earth should we trust either the UN or the Americans now?
Talk to me about his comments, Trump's comments on the Revolutionary Guard. Was that surprising or not really for you?
No, partly because I think we've seen this play up. And of course, the IRGC, which is, almost a quasi-militia private army wing of the president in Iran, is up to no good. We know that it is, basically supporting the Assad regime in Syria. It is behind some of the worst of the militias in Iraq. So there's lots of, I think, legitimate concerns and international concerns about the role of the IRGC. So the United States is trying to, I think, flex its muscles here. But, keep in mind here, one of the things that people may not recognize is that, the Americans don't have a good relations with the Iranians even before the 2015 agreement. So it's not like there's a lot of damage that it can do that hasn't been done already to the Iranians. What made the entire JCPOA, the Iranian nuclear deal, work was the multilateral effort. So frankly, whatever the Trump administration comes at to the Iranians, it's not going to work unless everybody signs on. And the world is frankly fed up of Trump and his unilateralist ways.
Yeah, exactly. Another sign that the U.S. is willing to go at it alone. Well, of course, earlier this week, pulling out of NAFTA, threatening again to pulling out of the UNESCO. Earlier this week, threatening to pull out of NAFTA again and of those Paris climate talks. Besma Mamadi, always appreciate your perspective. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Omar.
After the break, our weekending strategist panel is here to weigh in on today's top political stories. Please stay with us. Welcome back. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has wrapped up his trip south of the border. Earlier today, Trudeau delivered a speech before the Mexican Senate and made another push for keeping NAFTA alive.
Our challenge lies in ensuring that everyone benefits from economic growth. And we do that by pursuing an ambitious, progressive vision of what the future can and should look like. As leaders, we must stay squarely focused on the middle class and those working hard to join it. We know that the Mexican middle class is growing. In order to maintain that growth and offer families the support they need to prosper, workers here in Canada and around the world need to feel confident and secure in their jobs. We must ensure that workers are protected by progressive labor standards. They need to know that their governments and their employers have their backs.
Time now for a weekending strategy session with political commentator Jerry Nichols coming to us from downtown Toronto. In Regina, we've got Sally Hauser, a senior consultant with an Navigator. At last check, she was pulling up into the parking lot, so we will have her shortly. I promise. Hope I don't regret those words. And with me here in studio, Greg McEachern from Environics Communications. Okay, so let's start with NAFTA, and we'll bring Sally in when she is ready. Many observers are saying that the talks are on the verge of collapse. But this week, we saw the PM in the U.S. We saw him in Mexico. Is it all political theater, or was this week, did it actually make an impact? Jerry, let me start with you.
Well, you know, it can be political theater and also accomplish something positive. Those two things are not necessarily mutually exclusive. I think you're right, Omar, that there's kind of a negative vibe around NAFTA these days, people talking about Trump pulling the plug and we have to get ready for a post-NAFTA world. So given that kind of NAFTA negativity, it probably makes sense for Justin Trudeau to fly down to D.C. and do his magic charm offensive with Donald Trump and with the media and in Mexico, and to kind of turn things around and get more of a positive discussion going about NAFTA. So I think, you know, it's not really such a bad strategy what the Liberals are doing right here.
But what got done this week, Greg?
Well, what we see is a strategy that's actually worked before. We know that earlier this year, I believe, the media report suggested that Trump's son-in-law said that there was a window of opportunity for Prime Minister Trudeau to phone President Trump and say, you know, we want to renegotiate NAFTA. So we know that it's worked before. So I think for, you know, accounts of President Trump, he's a visual learner, shall we say. He gets a lot of his information from television and I think personal contact. And when you have the Prime Minister of Canada show up on your front door. The other thing, weirdly, there's people say that Trump is very influenced by good-looking people. And let's face it, the Trudeaus are a very good-looking young couple. So I think, you know, I agree with Jerry. I think he brought diplomacy, you know, right there. The other thing, too, that's really, you know, odd is around the criticism of the Liberals on this is they're facing the most protectionist president probably in recent history. And it's not the fault of a Liberal government. This is who this individual is. His own party, you know, the GOP is uncomfortable with some of the things that he's saying. So I think, you know, what the Trudeau administration has done is that they're level best to keep this alive. And no matter what happens, so if Trump was to walk away, they still have made incredible strides across the United States through, you know, state governments, governors, Congress. They've got a huge network for whatever happens next. And we saw that this week that Trump hinted that it might be a Canada-U.S. deal.
Here we've got Sally right now. Sally, Great to have you join the party. Let me get your thoughts on that, these NAFTA discussions and Trudeau's trip to the U.S. and Mexico this week. What was the highlight? What do you think got done, got accomplished?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there were an awful lot of photo ops, and that's great. And these kind of meetings often are, I think when you get to the actual leaders of the country, there's only, you know, so much that happens in those kind of bilateral one-on-one chats. So much actually happens in terms of NAFTA and the negotiations and, you know, the public servants and the various different people who are involved in the actual negotiations. One thing that was interesting to me, and I watched Prime Minister Trudeau's press conference with the Mexican president yesterday. And one thing that I think is maybe not getting enough attention on this is General Motors and their threats to move a lot of Canadian jobs and production down to Mexico. And I have to say, as more than obviously a casual political observer, that he gave one of the most impressive non-answers I have ever seen in my history of working in politics to questions on that. And, you know, to a certain extent, obviously, I'm on the other side of the political fence, but I have to say kudos. It was really quite breathtakingly a non-answer. And so good for that. The other thing that I noticed is that he brought up, you know, equality in women in Mexico. Mm-hmm. He did not do it in the United States. You know, I would say for reasons that are all too obvious, but obviously with accusations against Harvey Weinstein now and how that reflects on President Trump and all the accusations of harassment and assault that he's faced from women, that perhaps that might have been a little too uncomfortable for him to do in the United States.
Yeah, playing to different audiences there. Of course, whichever way these talks go will impact how Canadians view the Liberals. And there's an interesting poll out today I want to bring up. Very interesting numbers because I think we have a board up because it basically shows that the Liberals and the Conservatives, there you see it, are neck and neck at 35%. But here's the interesting thing. When Canadians were asked about specific tax measures like lowering the tax rate on the middle class, there you have it. 84% support that decision. In this next board, you'll see that 54% favor new rules for income sprinkling. And keep in mind, that's despite all the backlash that we have been hearing from doctors, from farmers, from small business groups. But this is the interesting question. When Canadians are asked overall if Trudeau has had a positive or negative impact on the tax system, a plurality of the respondents, 41% there, say negative. So what's going on here? Canadians support the specific proposals, but when you ask that broad question, they're saying that the impact is negative. Can you explain that, Jerry?
Well, what we have here is a classic case of